History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. What we've learned is that they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take that initiative to ask a few questions. And then to listen patiently enough to soak in some newfound perspective as memories from long, long ago take on new meaning in the here and now. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The journey that we get to go on today with 99-year-old George Madera of Gustine, California, is one that starts out on the East Coast in the Prohibition era, moves all the way to the Azores, then back to America because of World War II, through Italy and Greece and the war, and finally to a fateful post-war choice to decline lung surgery, a decision that would forever alter his and his family's destiny.
I was born in Massachusetts, New Bedford, Mass. And then was during the 1930s, the Depression was not too good then at that time. And my parents, they decided to go to the Azores. I was only 6 years old. So we went, and my father had done well. Although there was a Depression, he had an alcohol business, which was against the law at that time. But it was either do that or go on a soup line.
So your father was a bootlegger, as they called it, during Prohibition?
Yes, he was. So it was either doing that or go on a soup line. They used to call it a soup line. No jobs, you know.
Yeah, tell us about that, because most of us haven't lived through that. What were some of those things you remember seeing in those early childhood years?
Well, there's a little, I have a picture over there that I can show it to you, where my father had the business. Okay. It was just the front. It was looked like a sandwich bar, you know. I used to love to go over there because there was a bowling lane, one bowling lane. But at that time, the balls were small. They were not the big ones. I used to love to go over there because I used to like to play with the balls. So anyway, my father had a room where there was a poker room, like, where they drink and play cards and illegal stuff. And they had a store in the front, was just like a sandwich bar, you know. So he decided, things were bad. He decided to go to some, and he built a home, which is over there, picture. Over there in San Miguel, which is the largest island of the Azores. So we went over there, but my parents didn't last long. My mother passed away, she was about 34 years old, and my father was only 46.
Wow.
So I had a sister and two brothers. Mm-hmm. My sister was the oldest one, she took care of us. So when I reached between 16 and 17 years old, was during the Second World War, and the Portuguese army government was threatening to take me in the Portuguese army. I said, no, I'm an American citizen. I'd like to be an American army. So I decided to come. I was only about pretty close to 17. I came with a younger brother of mine. He was younger than I was, about 3 years old. So I came to an uncle that was in New Bedford. And from there, I was inducted to the Army.
Okay, and I want to ask you some more questions about this, because most of us haven't had an experience like this, right? And first of all, not to dwell on your father during Prohibition, but this is what they call a speakeasy? Is that what it was?
Yes, that's what they call it.
And did you know what was going on, or you were just
Well, I don't know much about what was going on. I know he was doing okay, you know.
So then they just come to you one day and say, hey, we're moving to the Azores?
Yeah. And we all went, and he had done well. So he figured the depression was still going on in New Bedford at that time. So he built a nice home over there, and he had a little farm, but he didn't last long. Like I mentioned it to you, my mother passed away, was only 2 days. And my father was about 46, 47.
Well, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes. That must have been a big life change, going from the U.S. to the Azores and leaving your friends behind and all that.
Yeah. Well, I was in kindergarten, so I didn't have many friends.
So what about life in the Azores before World War II?
I graduated from grammar school over there. Then I went to Punta Delgada, which is the city, the largest, the capital of the Azores, in fact. And I went to school, a special school that was agriculture. And I went over there, and I went about 3 or 4 years, pretty close to 4 years. A teacher, Domingos Rovell, a very famous, the most famous Portuguese painter. Paintings all over, I'll show you. He was like that painter from Spain, Picasso. He was the Portuguese Picasso at that time, because he was the most famous Portuguese painter.
So when we look at this box that you got in the hospital at the end of World War II, and you've done this sculpture or carving on the top of it, is that from some of his instruction? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I did learn some, not too long. I didn't spend too much time with him because I came to the United States. And then I never heard any more about him. So he was already pretty old. So that was it. Then I decided to come to the United States. That's because of the government, Portuguese government was threatening to put me in a Portuguese army. So that's how I decided to leave. And I didn't know much of the United States. But I went to my uncle. As soon as I turned 18, I was inducted to Florida for basic training, and then Italy. I landed in Naples about pretty close to midnight. I had to jump in a foxhole because some German planes came over. The alarm came on, but it was just for a short time. The alarm came on again, and they had barracks for us. That's when I spent about a year over there in Italy till I was transferred to the engineer company.
Well, and sorry for all my little detours here. I'm just, you know, every veteran's story is unique, and I've talked to people who grew up in a lot of places, but I've never thought about the Portuguese army in World War II.
Yeah, Portugal was neutral, but still they had problems with Africa. We had a colonies. There are two colonies, Angola and Mozambique was Portuguese. And there were army to maintain the government, the Portuguese government. So that's when they were using a lot of soldiers, so they threatened me, so I didn't want to do that.
And the other piece of this, you know, people go to Hawaii for a week and they get island fever because they're so far from the mainland. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize how far the Azores are from the Portuguese mainland. I mean, you're kind of out in the middle of nowhere, aren't you?
It is. But I was healthy, and when I came to New Bedford again, and I was inducted. I done well, and then, like I mentioned before, Italy first for a little bit over a year, and then 8 months in Greece.
But I think you told me before, when you were heading overseas, you thought you were going to North Africa, right?
Yes, on a ship. That I read that they were going to North Africa, but then things changed, and they decided to go with this ship to Italy, which was Naples, when I mentioned to you that we landed in Naples about pretty close to midnight.
Well, and what about the days and weeks that followed? What kinds of things did you see and experience?
Well, in Naples, was the experience was considered a front line because they, like I mentioned, I had to jump on a foxhole because the alarm came on that some German planes were coming overhead. And after it cleared, I went from Naples to Civitavecchia. That's another city, pretty close to Rome. But Rome was still with Germans occupying it. So in Civitavecchia, that was the Second World War encounter that I had. And they gave me 2 stars on my, I had ribbons. I had about 4 ribbons. And I had 2 stars, and they were stole for, was from being on the front lines twice, once in Naples and once in Civitavecchia. From there, like I mentioned, I went to Greece on an engineer company.
Well, and I want to dive a little deeper on some of this, because, again, most of us haven't experienced some of these things.
Civitavecchia was pretty bad because it was all mines, full of mines. In fact, I heard at that time they had a strip that they had cleared for us to walk on. And one time we were walking, and one of the guys, he wanted to pee. He stepped on the wrong place because the mine went up and blew his foot. So that was one of the... And I saw one time a wild dog was walking, and they had little wires. And I mentioned this friend of mine. I said, he's going to set one of the... And sure enough, he did. And some of the shrapnel was flying close to my ears. I was lucky that I was not hit by it. But that was the closest I came to getting a Purple Heart. I never did.
Well, we're thankful for that. And you talk about mines and booby traps. And, I mean, that to me, that would make me kind of nervous to go anywhere, right? I mean, you never know what you're stepping into.
I know. I even went to, this was a huge hotel that was abandoned by that, and we were taking care of it, you know. And I remember going in the basement and seeing a box of Red Devils was and grenades. And I was lucky I didn't get blown up with it. But I picked a couple and I threw it on the ocean, and some of the fish came up. But I stopped fooling around with that because I was scared. So that was one of the things that happened while I was over there.
Well, and if you were in those kind of situations, I mean, I have to imagine you saw a lot of things that nothing could have prepared you for. Did you have to deal with guys that you knew getting killed or wounded?
Well, there was one of the friends that was walking with me. He got wounded from a shrapnel from one of the booby traps that we set up. He got on a foot. So he was happy because that meant he was getting a Purple Heart, and you get so many points for that.
Right.
So he was happy about that.
Sounds like that was one of those million-dollar wounds, they called them?
Yes, it was. So that was it.
George Medeiros wasn't wounded in World War II, but he would spend 3 months in the hospital at the end of the war. We'll hear about that and why he's actually thankful for that episode today because of what it led to. And before we're done, we'll hear about his recent honor flight to Washington, D.C. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all a reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.